All right. After about a month off, welcome back to the Dapped on Draft podcast. I am your host, Corey Kinnon. Again, I apologize. It's been a long month of July. I had a buddy's wedding. I was on vacation. I had another wedding. I was back and forth to my in-laws in Indianapolis pretty much every weekend. So not a whole lot of time throughout the week to record either. But hey, we're back. Looking to do three times a week. But a couple announcements, a little bit of housekeeping before we get started. One, the Dapped on Draft podcast is now a part of Minute Media's podcast network. So Minute Media is are the people who own FanSided's online content, own Sports Illustrated's online content. So gonna see my podcast on some Sports Illustrated stuff here soon. But not specifically my podcast anymore, because part two of this housekeeping is a co-host is joining the Dapped on Draft podcast. So you might have remembered, if you remember the safety episode of What to Watch For When Scouting exposition that we did to launch kind of the summer part of this podcast, Dalton Miller actually broke down the safeties and kind of what he watches for when looking at safeties. And Dalton is joining the Dapped on Draft podcast as the co-host, the co-pilot here. So Dalton, welcome to the Dapped on Draft podcast.
Happy to be here, man. I miss talking ball. It's been too long. Did this full time at PFN for a long time. Talked a lot of football. Kind of got a little bit burnt out towards the end there. Had a child, a newborn, and got the summer to kind of, you know, get away from the game a little bit. And then I started itching, and I knew that you were starting a podcast, and I kind of reached out to you and said, hey, if you need a co-host, let me know. And it worked out. So I'm excited to be able to do this and really get back to my roots, which are the NFL draft. So excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Dalton, just for everybody listening, you mentioned PFN. Just tell them kind of your journey to draft content. You've got a really interesting one through the military to starting your own site to PFN. So why don't you just tell everybody kind of how you got where you are today?
So I got out of the military in 2016, January of 2016, and I went to school in Texas, North Texas, in University of Texas, Dallas is where I started. And I just was roaming the radio, and I heard 105.3 The Fan. And this was back, like I said, in 2016, the Dallas Cowboys, if you guys remember that, were not very good that year because Tony Romo got hurt in the preseason. So the draft was all they had. And so it was Dane Brugler and Brian Broaddus and Jeff Kavanaugh and Kevin Turner talking about the NFL draft almost on a daily basis on 105.3 The Fan, and I fell in love with it. I have always kind of, you know, watched quarterbacks because I am a former quarterback who, you know, not a very good one because I blew my arm out practically throwing curveballs at 12 years old. But I was, you know, kind of a little Tim Tebow-like. But I love breaking down the position even before I knew what I was looking at. And so when I heard them doing it, I just kind of dove into it, did my own thing for a while, learned as much as I could. Inserted myself with the guys at 105.3 The Fan, met Jeff Kavanaugh and Kevin Turner at multiple, you know, fan events and started talking football with those guys and became acquaintances with them. I started my own website, Blue Chip Scouting, which ran for a long time even after I eventually left it for the Pro Football Network. And that's what happened. The Pro Football Network reached out to me for a long time, trying to get me on to do draft stuff, and I kept pushing it off, and finally decided that it was the right career move to kind of move forward. And so I did that for a while, and then they offered me a full-time job covering the NFL, and it was going to be a new adventure for me. I really enjoyed breaking down and doing more of the film stuff when it came to the NFL, player evaluation, stuff like that, scheme stuff, which is really where I've kind of shifted to, or had shifted to at the NFL level. the scheme stuff is it really, really intrigued me because it's all a chess game with these pieces that are the players. So I really enjoyed that for a long time. And then I had a son in December, and it changed my world. And I decided, you know what? I love football. I love talking about football. I don't necessarily love being on somebody else's schedule for usually 12 plus hours a day. Plus, I live in Portugal now, so the time difference is rough sometimes, especially when you need to cover NFL games at 3 a.m. So, yeah, things kind of changed. My priorities switched, and so that's kind of what happened there. But, yeah, I just kind of inserted myself into the football world in Dallas and met a lot of really good people and learned a lot of really good things about the game, and I really dove into it and wanted to be a student of it. I'm still a student of the game. I will always be, because that is the kind of thing that I like to do. I am never satisfied with anything, and if you guys follow me on any other platform, you can see that stagnation is not what I am about. I'm always looking to get better, and I am very obsessive about the things that I do. If you guys follow any of my fitness content, you guys will see how obsessive I can be about that as well. So I'm just excited to get back and watch a ton of college football again, because it's been years since I really got to just sit down and enjoy Saturdays watching college football, because for so long it has kind of been my day off gearing up for Sundays in the NFL. So I'm excited to do it year-round and not just have to do it from February to April.
Yeah. So that's it. Dalton and I linked up. Oh man, we've probably been colleagues in this space since 2019, I would say.
Yeah.
Met at the Senior Bowl in 2020. And then the pandemic happened. And then he moved overseas. So I haven't seen Dalton in any space since the Senior Bowl in 2020, but had a really good chance to, I mean, the Senior Bowl back then, I think they got rid of it after that year, but they used to have an entire convention center room that was L-shaped, lined with projectors that you could literally just watch Senior Bowl practice on, like run the tape, drill after drill. And there would be like five or six of us around this projector for most of the afternoon after practice until dinner. And then probably come back after dinner. And so that's that's really where I got a good grasp of, you know, learning what other people see as well. Like,
yeah,
I can be annoying sometimes asking like, well, what are you looking at? Like that same Senior Bowl, I sat next to Jordan Reed when he was with the Draft Network. He's with ESPN now. And he kept just rewinding the snap. It was a Lloyd Cushenberry rep where he snapped it and then he just rewinded it immediately. And I was like, he wasn't watching the play. He was just watching the snap. I was like, Jordan, what are you watching? He's like, I'm looking to see where his eyes are going as soon as he snaps his football. So it's just such a cool experience to have that. And that was really my immersion into really the drafts community. I'd been kind of doing my own thing after grad school, but that was my first immersion. So I'm really happy to have Dalton joining the space with me. And we're going to get rocking and rolling here. YouTube 3 days a week now, as well. Again, the Minute Media Podcast Network. But for today's episode, we're going to talk specifically about one player, really because this one player you can talk for 30 minutes about, because he plays both sides of the ball, because he's such a dynamic athlete, because he impacts his team in such a dynamic way. And he did, coming from Jackson State to Colorado almost immediately, playing nearly 90 snaps a game. Early on that TCU game, I mean, he played every single snap, I think. So we're going to talk about Travis Hunter. We're going to talk about Travis Hunter as a corner. We're going to talk about Travis Hunter as a wide receiver, and we're going to talk about where we think Travis Hunter projects best at the next level. I think most draft nicks are kind of had the same consensus about that, but it's definitely worth having the conversation. So Dalton, let's dive right in. Give me your initial thoughts of Travis Hunter as a prospect before we dive into breaking down his tape.
Yeah, so my initial thoughts were actually funny. I was a little bit underwhelmed of what I had seen from him. And just for reference here, I started out with the Stanford game. So what I really like to do in these early days is find their best game, their worst game, and then best competition. And sometimes those overlap. And so I went to Stanford because I was like, man, he gave up a bunch of yards in this game. And I was wondering what had happened, and I was looking at him as an athlete, and everybody had said that he was, you know, elite, and I just couldn't get it. I couldn't get there with it until I watched more and more of him, and I saw some of the games where he was a little bit fresher on the defensive side of the ball, and that's when it occurred to me, and I want to take this back to, like, my high school days playing basketball, or, you know, if you're a soccer player or anything like that, having to play both ways, especially the college level, the Division I college level, FBS, that has got to absolutely drain you. And when you watch a guy play against a really good wide receiver at Stanford, his name escapes me right now, but he's number 13, and he is big and he is powerful.
Illuminor, I think it's, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but something, Eric Illuminor or something like that. Yeah.
Really fantastic player, and he kind of got beat up. And there were a couple reps where he got beat vertically, and I was like, this is not the elite athlete that I thought that had been billed to me. And so my initial reaction was, really good corner, unbelievable instincts overall, but I was a little bit underwhelmed with the athletic ability that I thought I was going to get with him. And so that was my first impression. And then the more you watch him, the more you really get to learn how special he really is.
Yeah, for sure. That wasn't the first game that I watched, so I have the complete... But I'm glad you brought that up because I want to hit on it because... I think it ties really well into what I think is one of his best traits and why it also got him in trouble in that game. But my first game was the UCLA game, which is just unbelievable to him. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum. Like, I think it's the first passing play of the game. He is sitting in cover two and comes off of one onto two on a way that I don't think I've ever seen a corner come off of a play like that and make a diving interception coming off of one from a buzz look in cover two to diving across the slot like that. And then his second interception in that game is some of the best transitional burst I think I've seen on tape in recent years, where he's got his hips squared and he opens and just launches as soon as his hips open and 0 to 100. And
I have no clue how he got to that ball.
Undercuts that football. And then the ball skills on that play, he's full extension, mm-hmm. just unbelievable. So my experience was the polar opposite of that, where I like to watch kind of their like look at their stats and say, oh, he had two picks this game. I want to see those picks. Like, yeah. I want to see the picks first. Let me see the ball skills and kind of see how it got there. Was it a fluke? Was it like the quarterback got hit and the ball flew in the air? Was it an overthrow and he just tracked it? But no, those were two of the highest quality picks that I've still seen in the same game from the same player of any corner I've watched this cycle. So, I think he's a tremendous player. I think you're there as well, but what I want to talk about are kind of some of the things he does well. Let's start with corner, since that's where we both said we started. Let's start with corner about what I think he does so well. And for me, it's his instincts, man. Like, mm-hmm. it's so apparent that this guy's a grinder, that this guy watches a lot of tape and works really, really hard to understand the tendencies of his opponent. You can't come off of your primary and onto a secondary the way that he does without a lot of film study and without a lot of instincts. And I think that, and specifically in zone coverage, is what sticks out to me the most, is just how smart this dude is. Like, clearly he's an athlete. Like, the athletic traits are there. The burst is there. Like, again, 0 to 100, as soon as he opens his hip out of his back pedal, like, the click and close, his ability to trigger and get downhill, change of direction is phenomenal. He's fluid, he's smooth. But I think people think that, oh, he plays at Colorado. He's, you know, this, he's got like his own Twitch channel. He's this really fun, but this dude is really freaking smart. He's really smart, and he understands what his opponents are doing. And I think that's kind of where I want to start. And what do you think when you think about like the mental aspect of his game?
Yeah, so I do think it might even be more innate than film study, because just the way that he's able to read and react off of reading QB intentions in zone coverage is outrageous. And one thing that you don't really get when you watch tape from All 22 is you don't get to see the quarterback's eyes, usually. I mean, you get to see head direction, especially if you get all four angles where you get both end zone angles. That's fantastic. But I do think he just has the innate playmaking ability of somebody like as a Dallas Cowboys fan here, just want to throw that out there, want to be transparent with you guys. Trayvon Diggs, somebody who is an innate playmaker, somebody who knows how to get to the football. And it's no surprise Trayvon Diggs is a former wide receiver, and that's what he was recruited as. And he was recruited as a wide receiver and as a safety at Alabama and transitioned to corner. With Travis Hunter, I mean, we are talking about one of the best prospects or recruits that we have seen in a long time, mm-hmm. at wide receiver, at corner, and as a corner, he just has it. And there's some guys who, at different positions, they just have it. And it's really tough to describe. And that ability to just see, react, and make plays, not just the athletic ability, like you said, and the athletic ability is there with him. When he is fresh, it's unbelievable to watch him change direction, because the foot, it's not just the foot speed, but it's the complete lack of wasted motion in his steps, in the way that he transitions, speed turns. He has it all. There are downsides with his game at corner, and I'm sure that we will get to them, but we are talking about somebody who has the ball skills, in my opinion, of a Trayvon Diggs, and has that gnat-like ability in man coverage like a Jaire Alexander. And he's not 5'10 either. He is 6 foot, 6 foot one. So he's got length to play with the taller, longer guys as well at the catch point, on top of having the ball skills of a legitimate NFL wide receiver as well. And so you're looking at somebody who has, as a cover corner, the entire package from day one at the NFL level. And I just don't see how going from both sides of the ball to primarily one side of the ball, if not exclusively one side of the ball, will do anything but make him a perennial Pro Bowler at the next level.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned you were a Cowboys fan, I thought you were going to comp him to his current head coach when you were talking about his innate ability to just make plays in the football. I was like, oh, you're going to talk about Deion. But
I don't talk about Deion Sanders. I never will want to talk about Deion Sanders. Great football player, but that's about all I'll cover.
I love it. He's almost more of a son than the quarterback the way he plays.
If Deion could have it his way, he would be, because that's the hierarchy.
Yep.
We know he loves Travis more than his other son.
Well. Yeah, I'm sure he's going to get some draft type based on that last name, but I don't know if I've seen a worst power four free safety out there. But then you can talk about the technical stuff too. Like, his press tech is all feet, man. Yeah. His press tech is all feet. Those hips stay square until they have to open. He doesn't give up blind spots. Like, he doesn't give up blind spots. And then his body type just goes along with everything we're talking about. Like, his arms have to be like 33 inches minimum. Like, they have to be 33 inches. And so like, when he wants to throw his hands, he'll throw his hands. But in press tech, it's all feet first. And then once you get the chance, yeah, square up. And he understands that so well. But again, going back to that Stanford game, because again, that was probably his worst game, right? And I want to talk about his instincts a little bit, because I think some room to grow is, we talked about how smart he is and how he understands tendencies and the ability to make a play on the football. I think a next step for him, and I think where Stanford maybe got the best of him, is he needs to start understanding, like, okay, this is a tendency that I'm picking up on, but how can they break that tendency if they see that I'm jumping this? And I think that happened a lot in that Stanford game too. So I think his eyes got caught in a lot of bad places.
Well, and a corner like him, or a corner like Trayvon Diggs, you have to take that good with the bad, because the film study is there for those guys to make plays. Trayvon Diggs is going to try to jump every single slant that he can. And you can get him with the sluggo. You can get these guys with the hitch of goats, the double moves, because they study so much film, because they are watching. And it's tough, because you can study film all you want, but unless you are there in that moment, it's going to be tough to see the difference in a wide receiver's hips between a slant and a sluggo or a hitch and go. There's minute differences that you might not be able to see on the film. So you are just looking and seeing and going off of what you know innately. At that depth, these are the routes that I really have to worry about. This alignment, these are the routes that I have to worry about at these certain depths. And these guys all know that stuff. But it's the ability to make decisions in that moment that make guys special. And it makes him special, and it makes Trayvon special, taking away the football. But like we've talked about, the reason why he is such a coveted prospect at the NFL level is because he has that, and the most of the time, the consistency to be a down-to-down cover corner like a Jaire Alexander as well.
Yeah, and for a guy with his
instinct, scheme versatile too.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
there's sure. Nothing he can't do schematically.
Mm-hmm. And for a guy with those instincts and that talent that we've been talking about, you don't want them thinking too much. Like, let him just go out and make a play on the football. So before we transition to what he does as a wide receiver, and I think this trait that we're going to hit on is a pretty good segue. Something that is a bit of a downside, and you mentioned, again, the Stanford game, the big-bodied receiver at Stanford, his play strength isn't quite there.
Yeah, he's just not a strong dude. Just period. Now, I do want to preface this by saying going both ways, not only your cardiovascular abilities are going to be tested, but when you are tired, you are just not going to be physically as strong either. It's the same as, you know, if you're supersetting bench press with dumbbell press. If you rested for 5 minutes, you might be able to do the top of your, you know, range with dumbbells. But you won't be able to do that if you try to do it immediately after bench pressing. So it's just like that. You can't go from offense to defense and play 140 snaps in a game and expect a guy to be able to defend a 215-pound wide receiver who has fantastic play strength if you are not 100% or 80% of your natural self, if you're playing and just trying to survive at 50% battery out there. So, yes, I do think that the play strength has to be upgraded, but I think that that's something that he can work on at the next level when he doesn't have to worry so much about his cardiovascular fitness being able to play like that. He can get a little bit stronger and put on maybe a little bit more mass because he's probably 6'1", and I bet he plays at lighter than 180 or close to 180 because he is pretty trim. Like, he's just not a, I guess, stacked together guy. And I had somebody ask me on Twitter, you know, somebody kind of comped him to Jalen Ramsey. And I said, Jalen's a completely different dude when it comes to the physical ability and the play strength, because he is a legitimate 200, 205-pound guy who could play safety, could play corner, and could beat the crap out of you. And that's just not what Travis Hunter does. He is more of that gnat, stick to you. And it's not like he's not willing to come up and make plays and tackle and do, you know, the nitty-gritty stuff. He's just physically not as imposing as some of these other guys that we will talk about in future podcasts about corners.
Yeah, for sure. So moving to the offensive side of the ball, again, Travis Hunter played a great, great deal of snaps, had over 700 yards receiving. So, I mean, an All-American two-way player is not an easy task. 721 yards, 5 touchdowns on 57 catches, while also playing corner full-time. That is an unreal thing to – I mean, who's the last guy to do something like that? Chris Gamble at Ohio State? Probably. Like, that's just absurd. So, he is a playmaker. And, again, if you look at the offensive talent on that Colorado roster a year ago, they kind of needed him to be Superman. It's probably going to be the same about this year. I know they had some good portal luck again this year, and they landed a big 5-star offensive tackle as well. So that's going to help. But again, that wide receiver room is just not, I mean, Xavier Weaver is on a roster as an undrafted free agent in the NFL, but outside of that, it's pretty slim pickings. So talking about his game as a wide receiver, I think that athleticism is a good place to start. That fluidity is a good place to start because it absolutely translates as a route runner. It absolutely translates with his ability to get off of the line of scrimmage with zero waste of movement, in terms of his releases. And then those kind of instincts kind of kick in too, and his ability to create blind spots as well, to get opposing defensive backs, because he knows them so well, how to do it so well, to open their hips before they probably should, and how to exploit that. I think that's a great place to start with him as a wide receiver is – He gets open.
Yeah, give him a two-way go from the slot, and he played a majority of his snaps on offense in the slot, about not quite 2-to-1, but close to it. And I think that's where he's best, because that's where you want that type of agility, man. You were talking about the lack of waste of motion. The reactive athleticism that he has at corner is kind of multiplied by his ability to be proactive and to play with the tendencies that he knows as a corner, and not just as a corner, but I mean, God, he gets to get lined up in the slot against safeties, sometimes linebackers, and it's just game over at that point. Not only is, I think that as good as he is as a route runner, you know, against man coverage and his just natural athleticism, his ability to win on slot fades and things of that nature with that release package is very good. But he's incredibly intelligent when it comes to finding space for his quarterback and getting open against zone coverage. Mm-hmm. Because I think it is because he's a defender and he knows how to get open against zone coverage. He finds those windows consistently. But I think the one thing that I really was impressed with the most as a wide receiver was his ability to finish in traffic, which is something that, because of the lack of overall play strength, I didn't expect him to win as much or finish as much in traffic as he did. And I didn't expect him to be able to kind of get out of his comfort zone or get out of his window and make plays outside of his frame around traffic as well. On the inside, I mean, he has no issues with going over the middle of the field. And for a guy who's playing both ways, was the number one recruit in the nation, and is going to probably be a top five pick in the NFL draft, and to have that toughness, even though he doesn't have the physical ability to go out there and, you know, maybe beat people up on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball, the toughness to take those shots when you are the dude is really fun to see, actually.
It resulted in a lacerated kidney. Was that a kidney? A lung?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year against Colorado State as well, which is a little bit of offensive scheme, a little bit of his quarterback putting some footballs probably where they shouldn't go or doesn't have the zip to kind of get it there quick enough. But yeah, he's a tough dude. Mm-hmm. He's a tough dude. And his knack for green grass is a note that I took down as well. He just understands his stems. He understands how to leverage. He understands how to sit when he needs to sit. He's just a tremendous player against zone coverage and against man coverage too. And one thing that I wrote down is he had zero charted drops on 73 targets last year.
Yeah.
He has one charted drop his entire career, which he didn't play a lot of wide receiver at Jackson State his freshman season.
Yeah.
But zero drops on 73 targets a year ago.
And my favorite thing about him is he is always one step ahead when he catches the football. And you see a lot of times guys who are very good immediately after the catch, I mean, he knows where the defender's leverage is, and he is able to play with them. And to be able to finish those and not have those concentration drops with that is massive, because it means you're not going to miss the easy ones, and you're going to be able to make that first guy miss consistently. And that was my favorite thing about him, is his ability to make that first guy miss consistently. Now, the downside to him as a wide receiver is the same one that is the one downside to him as a corner. As good as he is at making guys miss, he might break a tackle a game, maybe. I mean, yeah. he just doesn't have the natural contact balance in his lower half to make guys miss and then break a tackle and pick up extra yards, or to break a tackle and really, you know, open up the big one and get 30, 40 yards after contact. You're just not going to get that with him. And I think that overall, as a wide receiver, that really limits him or limits his upside at that role.
Yeah. A name that we had tossed around off air, not as a comp, but specifically after the catch and what they can do with the ball in their hands was Jerry Jeudy. Mm-hmm. Because again, not
similar frames, similar frames too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think their play strength at the wide receiver position, at least how Jeudy has translated to the NFL, has tended to, I would say, translate. Like, Jeudy does not do well against press coverage. Jeudy will get rerouted a ton, and that's something that I've noticed again when I was watching Travis Hunter. Is if he is running a slot fade, he's got to kind of work across somebody's face. He does this little dip move where he just tries to dip under the defender, where he tries to make himself skinny and get out of the way, but he gets rerouted a lot. I don't think he quite understands how to use his hands as a receiver, either at the top of the routes to create that little cushion, like in the words of Ben Solak, right? Always commit offensive pass interference.
Yes.
He doesn't really understand that quite yet. And maybe that'll never come because he doesn't have that stature, that physicality to kind of do that. But I see that as a huge draw. And I think, again, I mentioned Jeudy, that's caused me to miss on a lot of wide receivers. So I'm a little hesitant on Hunter as a wide receiver, which is probably okay because I view him as a top 10 guy as a corner. But I think that makes me a little more hesitant on him as a wide receiver is that lack of play strength, is that ability to just get rerouted almost way too easy, but what he does when he is in space or when he can get the football in his hands is just so fun.
Yeah, and I think when you look at him, for me, and I tweeted it out earlier today, I said I don't see any reason why you can't throw him on the offensive side of the ball at the NFL level, But I do think, you know, and we've talked about him enough at this point. I think the audience knows that we like him on the defensive side of the ball more. But I think you can use him situationally on offense. And I definitely think that you can use him as a punt returner specifically because of his ability to make guys miss, because of his ability to find green grass. Obviously, the lack of contact balance might stop him from taking a bunch back to the house, but he will be able to consistently pick you up a couple of yards after making that first guy miss because he is so good at kind of the multi-layer of being able to understand where defenders are coming from to tackle him and being able to make that first guy miss and to kind of plan that out proactively.
So I wanted to ask you what you thought the reason we saw such a steep increase in him playing in the slot this year. Do you think it's specifically to maximize his skill set to get him more off man, get him into space more?
Yes.
Or do you think it was, you do? Yeah.
I mean, I think it has to be. For me, guys like that, there's no reason to play them outside, especially with his agility. I want him to have more of a two-way go. I don't want the sideline to inhibit his ability to get open whatsoever. And that's why you've seen kind of a resurgence recently of the 6'2", 6'3", you know, a little bit more physical guy. And we're at the point with, you know, coaching or personal training where even these 210, 215-pound guys are running 4.3s at this point. So it doesn't really matter that they are big. They are no longer big and slow. They are big and also very fast. Now, many of them aren't quite efficient enough with their feet to be fantastic route runners, but it doesn't really matter as much on the outside as an X receiver as it would in the slot. And I think somebody like Travis Hunter can come in situationally on the offensive side of the ball at the NFL level if you want to give him, you know, 5-10 snaps a game on offense and get him into jet motion and get him moving and allow him to use his athleticism to run a couple of slot fades because he will outrun dudes too. He is a fast guy when he is not completely gassed.
Yeah, so my question now, Dalton, is did you put preliminary grades on him? Like a summary grade?
So I have all my stuff is numerical, and I won't do that for a long time. But just like watching him and knowing where, you know, kind of the grades probably will land, I still think he might be cornerback 2 for me. But that's because we're talking about the entire package of another guy who is 6'2" and is more physical and is probably even longer. And a guy who just consistently in a big conference lined up in man coverage against the best of the best and beat the crap out of dudes. Mm-hmm. So I really, really enjoy that. And I love Travis Hunter, and those instincts really, really are bringing me into him, and it's what made him go from, there might be a couple guys better than him at corner, to the more I watched him say, oh, yeah, this is the dude. This is the dude. And if it wasn't for the entire physical package of another player, and that's the thing about summer scouting, is until there's the final product and you actually have to draft these guys, you can say, that guy has a little bit more physical upside, so I'm going to I'm going to like him a little bit more over the summer. And then you got to really nick them for not progressing the way that you wanted them to. But for now, it is a very tight race at the top of this cornerback ranking.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, this cornerback class is, it's unbelievable.
Really good.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I can think of five off the top of my head that like that guy should go first round.
But yeah, and we'll talk about it eventually. But how are all of a sudden all these dudes who are 6'2" and 6'3" actually able to move? Because I watched Nashon Wright play. Mm-hmm. The Dallas Cowboys drafted him. And I said when it happened that it was a bad decision because he couldn't move. And I look at guys and I'm like, anatomically speaking, a 6'4" dude is just not going to be able to mirror and match a guy who's 5'11". And these guys, Sauce Gardner, 6'2", can move with anybody. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Pat Surtain, 6'2", can move with anybody. It doesn't matter. And you're seeing, again, these guys are just better athletes than they were a decade ago or even half a decade ago.
Yeah, and the thing about this quarterback class, too, is we're talking about guys from all over the nation. Yeah, Ohio State's got the guy. Michigan's got the guy, right? But we're talking about Colorado, which that's a unique situation where a five-star
Arizona
athlete uses to Arizona, Kansas, East Carolina. Like, we're talking about, like, these smaller schools, and these guys are popping up out of out of everywhere.
Yeah.
So I mean, this quarterback class is going to be a one to look forward to for the next 8 months. So really looking forward to that. But I think that's all we got for Travis Hunter. That's a good 35-minute episode right there. Anything else you want to add on Travis Hunter before we close this book?
No, unbelievable prospect already. I'm really excited to see how they use him this year. I hope they use him more on the defensive side of the ball and a little bit less on the offensive side of the ball. But overall, an unbelievable player. I mean, and you can understand that just by listening to his head coach talk about him. Mm-hmm. When that guy, who gives kudos to almost nobody but himself, gives kudos the way that he does to him and doesn't want him touched in practice and treats him like a son, that's arguably the best cornerback of all time, giving respect to a 21-year-old kid like we've never seen him give respect to anybody before. So that's how you know that this young man is truly special.
I don't think I ever technically gave a grade. I do like preliminary grades. I use my same grading scale that I do in April in summer. But again, a lot can change, and I haven't quite figured out how to incorporate body count or like not body count, body count, body type into like that grading scale or whatnot. But I think he's a top 10 player at corner, like straight up. Like he should go in the top 10, like tomorrow if the draft. He should go top
10. I agree
as a corner. As a wide receiver, I would be hesitant to put anything higher than like a top 50 grade on him. Like maybe top 50, probably top 75 is where I'd feel comfortable with him as a wide receiver. Again, because I've been burned by kind of wide receivers who are twitched up, who are electric at the football in their hands, but then when they get to the NFL level, they cannot compensate for the beatdown that comes from NFL corners. Again, Judy's a really good example of that. Elijah Moore, it's funny, I cover the Browns, the two first guys I mentioned are both Browns players. I loved Elijah Moore out of Ole Miss. He played outside the numbers the majority of the time, and he was cutting dudes up. Gets the NFL, and he can't, I mean, he gets bullied if he's running routes downfield. So I am hesitant about some of that stuff, but again, tremendous player. Moving forward with the Depth on Draft podcast, as I mentioned, we're putting episodes on YouTube. I've got a player interview as well that I'm going to release. Dalton's going on vacation next week. So, I'll release, that player interview next week with Purdue offensive lineman. I think he's a tackle for them. I think he projects as a guard, Marcus Bowe. He's a really good player. One of my guys early on. I've already talked to him, sat down, got to cut that up, but, put that on YouTube as well. 3 days a week. We're really going to dive into this thing, man. We're really, really going to get cooking here. So I'm really excited. Football's right around the corner. Now that our kids are relatively the same age and are a little more self-sufficient and don't need, for me, I have two and under. So that's a little more challenging to have hands and time to do things because my 2.5-year-old is a monster right now, straight in his toddler era. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to diving right in. But for now, this has been the Dapt on Draft podcast. I am your host, Corey, and welcome to the show, Dalton.